Welcome to the Exec MBA podcast. I'm your host, Brett Whitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with Matt Arney. Matt is an alumnus of the Executive MBA program. He's a graduate from the Executive MBA class of 2015. We recently connected with him to talk about his MBA journey, how he decided to pursue an MBA, what led him to Darden, and what he's been up to since graduation. Matt is a military service member, and he recently separated from the military. He's planning his next thing. It was really fun to kind of hear about his Darden journey and everything that's going on in his life. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here is my interview with Matt Arney. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Brett. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. Should note for our callers, you have a tremendous view behind you. You got all these great books. You got some, I think, pilot helmets and nice trees out the background. It doesn't come through on the podcast, but I did want to flag that for our listeners.
Yeah, that's great. It's stuff that I've accumulated throughout my time, and so it means a lot to me and my experiences, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit, and how they led me to Darden.
Well, how are you doing? How are you and your family at this time?
Well, we're doing great. I finished up my last command tour here in the Navy out here at Whidbey Island outside Seattle, Washington. And when we came out here in 2018, weren't exactly sure what we were going to do after that. Knew it was going to be 3 years. And we just found that we just loved the area. And so we decided to retire out of the military and make the transition. And it's been good. So we've been settling into our new neighborhood, new house. And I've been spending time as I wrap up active duty, figuring out what I want to do when I grow up.
Well, the Seattle area is beautiful. I had not been out there until a couple, gosh, it feels like a world away, but maybe a few falls ago. And I'm a child of the 90s. I grew up with all of those bands. So for me as a music fan, it was such a treat to be there in Seattle, kind of wondering, like, what was it like in 92, 93? Visiting the Seattle of today is a little bit different. Obviously, a huge tech capital now, and it wasn't quite that way back then, from what I understand.
Yeah, that's right. My exposure to back then is to the movie Singles, and which was a classic. But I'd visited here when I was a late teenager, and then just a couple other times. But it's a great place, the Museum of Pop Culture and all kinds of things they have around here, plus the environment. So I definitely recommend any out there to get out here and check it out.
Well, Matt, I have not had a podcast guest mention the movie Singles yet. And what a treat for this movie to come up. Cameron Crowe, classic, features all sorts of great Seattle bands, a legendary movie soundtrack.
That's
and,
right.
Jeff Immense and Eddie Vedder in the movie as part of Matt Dillon's band. It's just really a product of its time. I think it's fair to say that it's a real period piece.
That's right. Yeah, it certainly is.
All right. Well, let's talk about you. Tell us, you started to share a bit more about your background. You mentioned your most recent station in the Navy out there at Whidbey Island, but let's talk a little bit more about your story. What's your story?
So, Brett, I grew up mainly around the DC area. We settled down there when I was a kid. My dad was an F-4 pilot in the Navy in the Vietnam era. And so we'd moved around a little bit when I was young, but we settled down there, and he made his transition from naval service there in the Pentagon to stuff around the DC area. And so then I also had an older brother, Skip, who was a couple years older than me. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom for a while. And then she made her way into real estate and then into loan financing and office management. So she had her own, you know, really good career. But I knew growing up that I always wanted to go to the Navy. I wanted to be a Navy pilot. And so after high school there out of Alexandria, Virginia, I went to the Naval Academy through the Naval Academy prep school program and then finished that up and then went into flying airplanes. And so I was fortunate to be able to get that. And so I spent a career flying the F-14 Tomcat in the F-18F, Rhino or Super Hornet. I was a guy in the back seat that has a chauffeur to drive him around and play the computer games, talk on the radios, and do all that kind of stuff that the weapon systems officer does. So it was a great, great career flying. I had about 3,000 hours of flying. I've been in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan, Somalia. I've been to every continent in the world except South America and Antarctica. And I, right before Darden, I commanded a squadron of about 230 people aboard the USS Ronald Reagan. And we did combat operations. And we unexpectedly also did disaster relief operations with Tomodachi after the tsunami and earthquake of March 2011. And so that's where I was, you know, coming into the decision to go to Darden. And I'd just recently been married. We've been married about 3 years. I met my wife, Summer, who's from Lebanon. We met in Abu Dhabi when I was working at the embassy there. And so I had an established career and I was enjoying life and was kind of at a decision point at that point.
All right. Well, I have a couple questions for you. Did you always know that you wanted to fly? You mentioned that your father had flown and you sought this path out yourself. I'm just curious, is this something you knew you wanted to do?
I did. I remember being in first grade and I had to do one of those, what do you want to do when you grow up, little papers. And I can still remember it to this day that I wrote. I was interviewing my dad one morning before he was going off to the Pentagon. And it was about landing airplanes on aircraft carriers. And so I just always knew I wanted to do that. And even though he left the Navy around that time, I was still surrounded by that influence from his friends who had continued on. And so I still was able to enjoy that and be inspired by it.
And so you mentioned you were the person in the second seat. How are these roles assigned? Can I ask your role novice question?
Do people
get into one thing versus the other thing?
So it's really mainly dependent on your eyes. And so I had an eye issue with depth perception, so I couldn't be a pilot. And so I had the opportunity to be a naval flight officer. And so when you then get selected for the NFO program, you go through what we call a pipeline, because it starts off as one big pipe that everybody starts in. And then it starts branching off of you as you hit decision points through the training. And so it took me about a year and a half to get through the training and then get my wings and go to be an F-14 Rio. And so really, like I said before, I was just fortunate. Of course, it takes a lot of work. Everybody's putting a lot of effort into it. But there's a lot of things that you have to create your luck, create your opportunity. And so it just really worked out that I was able to persevere through that time and realize my dream of flying fighters off of aircraft carriers.
Does it take a while to get used to flying off and on an aircraft carrier? Like, I know these are massive. But I don't know, seeing it on TV, seeing it in Top Gun, like, or whatever is the reference for my limited exposure to this. I'm like, okay, that is, it doesn't seem easy, but maybe it gets routine at some point.
Well, there's a lot of training that goes into it, which makes it look easy from the outside, but it's never easy. An aircraft carrier is 1,000 feet long. It's 4.5 acres of deck out there, but it looks really small when it's packed with airplanes and you're coming aboard in bad weather at nighttime, that kind of stuff. So it's a game of inches. And it's, as we've seen throughout the decades, and as a matter of fact, this year is the 100th anniversary of U.S. Navy aircraft carrier aviation. And there's lots of examples of how badly it can go wrong when you're not on your game and doing things right.
Okay. Well, thank you for confirming my previous suspicion that this is actually quite complicated, because I'm thinking like the ocean things, it's not like things are still moving. You're moving. The boat's moving. I don't know. There's motion. And of course, night and pitch black dark, not a whole lot to go off of out there. I can imagine.
That's right. But it's still thrilling. And some of my best memories are beautiful blue sky, not a cloud out there. You're in the middle of the ocean. And mean, you're flying over the ship, getting ready to come aboard, and it's just, there's a beauty to it that everybody should be able to experience, but unfortunately, only very few can.
Well, one of the things you mentioned is operating out of an embassy in Abu Dhabi. And is that something you got to do a lot of in your career? Because, you know, we talked about flying here. One would think maybe being in an embassy is, well, maybe it's flying related, but it's not quite the same as being in a plane.
That's right. It actually didn't have anything to do with that. There are two times that I went to embassy duty. One was, as I mentioned, in Abu Dhabi, when I just had a little bit of time. I'd already been selected for command. I just finished my year at the Naval War College in that master's program. And so I had some time to kill. So I asked to go overseas somewhere. I really wanted to go into Iraq or Afghanistan to work as like a forward air controller or something to get closer to the fight. But they came back to me and said, hey, we really need somebody to go to the embassy to work this liaison office. And so I did that, and it forever changed my life because I met my absolutely wonderful bride. But it was really different from flying to doing liaison work with UAE government and other stuff. And then I also subsequently, after Darden, went to the embassy in Stockholm, where I spent 2 years as a naval attaché and working very closely with the Swedish Navy, the Swedish military, the Ministry of Defense, and the attachés from about 25 other nations that were represented in Stockholm. So it was a really great experience in diplomacy and representation and all kinds of aspects that were really valuable for me and for our family.
It's a beautiful, beautiful city, a wonderful place to be. I went there, we were talking before we started the podcast, I went there a few summers ago. Gosh, it feels like forever now, but very laid back city was my impression. Like people were, I don't know, maybe I misjudged the Swedish people, but people didn't seem to be in a rush and just very livable too. Easily walk around, it's got great public transportation, lots of water, yeah. Things to do. So
it sure does. Yeah, it's I was going to get into this later, but in Darden, I had the opportunity near the end of my time to do one of the global business experiences. And that was a 1 week in Stockholm at the Stockholm School of Economics, studying entrepreneurship, innovation, and sustainability. So it really gave me an interesting insight into the Swedish culture that promotes innovation and entrepreneurship and sustainability. And so, as you mentioned, the Swedish people, they really do appear in a way laid back. They're very elegant. They are, they're very focused, and they're very good at being present. And my wife and I found them to be just wonderful people. We have great friendships from there. And impressive also because they're very successful in a lot of ways, and yet they still believe in doing their fika a couple times a day, which is their coffee break where they socialize around coffee. It's not just go grab a coffee real quick and keep moving. They take their summer vacations and for 5 weeks out of the summer. And so there's a lot of things that I would love to be able to embrace more fully in the Swedish culture.
Yeah, the fika is a nice thing. And I also think they have incredible pastries over there, like cinnamon rolls and cardamom rolls and all this kind of stuff. So
that's right.
Yeah, the Swedes have a lot figured out. So maybe we can learn some things from them. So let's come back to your business school story. I'm sure we'll get back into Sweden, Scandinavia at some point.
Who knows where it'll go?
That's right. Well, tell us a little bit more about how you decided to pursue an MBA. Is this something you had always thought about, or was, you know, cast your mind back to when you were making these decisions? Was it a relatively recent thought for you?
So it was relatively recent. I was, as I mentioned, I was just finishing up command of a squadron, did a deployment overseas during that time. And I had just moved to be operations officer on one of our aircraft carriers. And so I went right out to deployment there. My wife, who, you know, we'd only been married for, at that point, a year and a half, maybe. We already had a newborn, and it was basically, I got to go to the Persian Gulf to go meet the ship to take over as OPSO for this 3,000 person aircraft carrier. And you've got to sell the house, move, and do all that stuff. So that's the life of a military spouse, unfortunately. And we could do a whole other podcast on that topic. But so I went out, I spent a couple months. The ship had left from Washington State and was going into Norfolk, Virginia at the time for a midlife overhaul, which is a four-year, $4 billion overhaul where we refuel the reactors and do a lot of modifications. And so I brought the ship into Norfolk a couple months later, and we were moving into a house that I had bought some time before. And it was just kind of, we're sitting on the back deck and just like, okay, now what? You know, so that was kind of a whirlwind, give up command, go out to the ship, move to Norfolk. And then it was that, okay, now what are we going to do? I was retirement eligible, having just gone over 20 years. And so our general attitude was we wanted to stay in the Navy as long as it was fun and engaging and we were having a good time as a family. And so I looked at the opportunities there. I saw the attaché in Sweden opportunity, and we decided we were going to do that. But I was thinking longer term. This isn't going to last forever. And so that's when I had also, by the way, had applied for a Navy program called the Moreau Scholar Program. And I'd been selected as the one candidate for the Navy for a post-master's study program. And I learned a lot of valuable lessons through that process because it didn't work out for me. Thankfully, it didn't work out for me. But I learned a lot about getting into schools, civilian schools. And it I realized that you have to go visit. You have to go spend some time there on grounds in the case of Darden. So even though that didn't work out, it really played into opening my mind to other opportunities. And so, like I said, I wasn't sure where the Navy career was going to go at that point, but I did know that when it was done, whenever that was going to be, I wanted to make sure I had the right tools to be able to go out and do well in the private sector. And so I ran into all the naysayers too. Oh, you don't need to spend your money and time on an MBA. You can, you know, look at me. I didn't do that, and I'm doing just fine. And I get that. It works for some people, but I came to the realization that this is something that I really wanted. It was about 4 or 5 years after my master's program at the War College. And so I really enjoyed the learning experience again. And so I knew that I was looking forward to that again. And so I ended up applying. And so, you know, that's how we got to the business school decision. And I say we, because it wasn't just me. My wife was right there with that decision because she knew she was going to have to shoulder the burden as well.
And so how did Darden get on your radar as you thought about programs?
Yeah. So pretty quickly, I admit I wasn't too familiar with it throughout my Navy career, but I quickly, as I was doing some research, I found some friends who had been to Darden, and one was in who ended up, he was there at the time at the executive format, Doug Denenny, and then Gus Nickel, who, when I looked at the Darden website and they had ambassadors on the website, I saw Gus's picture there. And I said, okay, I got to reach out to Gus and talk to him. And of course, through those people, I was immediately consumed with what a great community, what a great program, how developmental it is. And so it's really through some research and some friends. I had friends who went to other business schools as well. And so I certainly talked to them about the business school experience and why they like their programs. I had one friend who had decided not to go to Darden. And so it was, of course, interesting to hear why he felt that was important to have gone somewhere else. But through all that, and then having the opportunity to visit was key. And so my wife and I went down together, and there was an event going on in the springtime. And so we enjoyed just seeing the community and the feeling of family and the and of course, the grounds at the time. You know, for the listeners out there, this was before the Sands family grounds. And so I was in Charlottesville for every on grounds, except for when we went to China. And so being there in Charlottesville and at the Darden grounds was also just something that I just said, I see myself here. This is where I want to be. And so that's how I had had decided on Darden. And I will say one of the other things that really impressed me was the focus on learning and knowing that research also comes from the professors, but seeing with every interaction, it was the focus on learning. It wasn't there that professors were there to do research and, oh, by the way, I'm going to teach. It was, I'm here to promote learning. And, oh, by the way, I also do research.
Well, I appreciate your note about the many charms of Charlottesville in the springtime. Our students still get a couple touch points in Charlottesville, and I think it's fair to say that once people have spent some time on the grounds there, they're eager to get back. We found that to be the case with our executive MBA classes in recent years, that they're always planning football weekends and basketball weekends, winery tours. I mean, finding their way down there, even for things that aren't called Leadership Residency 1 and Leadership Residency 2. So you come to Darden. It's a family decision, as you mentioned, and you get into it. And imagine there might be some learning curves. One of the things we talk about here on the podcast is that it's always an adjustment for everyone, regardless of what you've done previously, what your academic background is. This is Darden. This is graduate business education. It's case method, you know, the list can go on. But I wonder, what were the biggest challenges or the learning curves for you, Matt, as you navigated Darden as a new executive MBA student?
Brett, I love the term learning curve because that's not what it was at Darden. It's a learning jump. It's, you know, from before day one, because I remember getting the box of like materials for LR1 and the electronic, hey, you've got to do these kind of pre-admit courses. And like, okay, here we go. And so it was a big jump, in how to work through prioritization. And certainly, you know, the family aspect of it, the realization that, okay, we've been talking about this for a while. We decided to apply. I had the interview. I remember when my wife and I were on a kind of weekend away from our one son at the time, when I got the call that, hey, you're in. So, you know, we're excited. And then it was a realization, okay, it's time to get serious. This is happening. And so that first year, you know, there's the learning teams that you come to rely on pretty heavily. And the team concept for me was very familiar. One of your podcasts I listened to before this, there was your guest was talking about how she wasn't as familiar with that team concept through her studies, but through the Naval Academy and the Naval Academy Prep School and the Naval War College. I mean, it's cooperate to graduate. You've got to work together to get through these things. So I absolutely embraced and welcomed the learning team concept, and it was critical. And so the first year was great. So many great memories, great residencies, great on-grounds weekends. And some really, you know, fun memories of those relationships. I remember one time, back then, I'm not exactly familiar with how the terms go now, but we had, each term was about 3 months long. And so in the first on grounds for our second term, our second son was born. And it was like the day before I was supposed to leave for on grounds. So my learning team friends, like, don't you even think about coming here. You know, we'll pass you the notes. Everything will be fine. So sure enough, of course, appropriately, I skipped the on grounds. But as I was dealing with a 2-year-old and a newborn, I remember one learning team meeting at like 9 o'clock at night after one of the classes during the week. And I just heard this laughing, and we didn't use Zoom, we used something else, but you know, it would trigger by the sound of somebody. And so I realized that my camera had come on because I was collapsed in my chair. I'd fallen asleep because I was so exhausted from being OPSO, managing family and learning stuff and trying to catch up from missing an on grounds. But it was just a culmination of all these great personal experiences throughout. Great food at the Abbott Center, which also promoted great conversations and great relationships as we would have lunch and stuff around the Abbott Center, which I really think fondly of. The Darden Inn, I always felt wonderful showing up to the Darden Inn, knowing that I had a great 3 days ahead of me, and certainly the pub there where we had, again, lots of great conversations and solved lots of world problems there. But the curriculum throughout that first year, you know, was the hardcore skills, the accounting, the finance, the economics, the leading organizations, the operations. We were taking, I think, 6 courses per term. And like I said, each term wrapped up in 3 months. So it was truly a fire hose of information out there. I mean, you're just drenched in knowledge and just trying to soak in and drink whatever you can out of that, knowing that you're not going to remember it all, but just being grateful that you'll be able to take in whatever you can. So it was a really challenging and fun and engaging experience.
So yeah, a little bit of different structure for our students these days. They move in 2-month increments and typically are taking 3 classes at a time. But I can tell you the thing that has not changed is the challenge of the experience. You know, everybody's learning something new. They're stretching themselves. They're figuring out, as you mentioned, prioritization, what's most important in a given week. Sometimes it's school, and sometimes, as you mentioned from your story, of having a newborn in your family, a new addition to the family, sometimes it's not school and you have to lean on others. I think for some of our students, it was great to hear about your prior team experiences in an academic setting. I really do believe for many of our students, though, this is much more team-oriented than their prior undergraduate or graduate school experiences. The fact that you're going to be working with a group of people to kind of get ready for class and you're asking people for help in this kind of way. And we assign a team to every incoming student. And many of our students will actually work with multiple teams. I do think that's a shift for people. To your story, that group of people plays an important role in helping people navigate the program academically.
Yeah. And really, I mean, what do we do nowadays that you don't rely on teammates? I mean, certainly from my experience flying airplanes and operating ships and stuff. I mean, it's all about being high performing teams or working to be high performing teams. But really, you know, even as I look at opportunities in the private sector, I mean, you can be an individual contributor, but still you're going to be part of the team. And so having the opportunity at Darden to refine your skills at being a team member and trying to develop your team into a high performing team are just really important lessons beyond the academics that you're presented with.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Darden and then kind of moving into post-Darden. So you highlighted a lot of favorite memories. You talked about the Darden Inn. Maybe you know this. Like one of the really exciting things on grounds right now down in Charlottesville is there's a hole in the ground, but a lot that's happening. We've gone vertical with the new inn construction. Have you seen this like $120 plus million in project that's taking place?
Yeah, at the 5-year reunion that we did on our 6th year because of COVID, and we ended up doing it virtually again. Great presentation on what was going on with the Darden Inn, which of course I felt a little bit of sadness that what I experienced is no longer there, but I know it's just going to be just an amazing place to go, and I look forward to visiting there someday, seeing it myself.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be amazing. It's quite a significant footprint when you look at what's happening there. When you walk around on North Grounds and say, "Oh, well, that's the future Darden Inn." So, you know, no more Sloaney's Pub, but there will be, you know, food service there. There'll be all kinds of things. So it'll be an exciting addition. And my understanding is that it's going to be ready for graduation in maybe like a year plus or so.
Okay.
So coming around. So, you know, stay tuned. More to come.
10-year reunion. My 10-year reunion. I'll be sure to check it out.
Well, when you look back on your Darden experience, when you take stock of those 21 months or so, what really jumps out to you where you started to where you were in graduation?
Yeah, one of the reasons I reached out to you, Brad, because you've got so many great conversations on your podcast, and I knew from my experience deciding to go to Darden and then going there, and my friends who've gone to business school, when it comes to the military and veterans, a lot of people decide when they're right at the end, either they're in their last tour and they're able to create the opportunity to go to a business school, or they actually get out. And we see a lot in like the 10 to 14 year point of military careers, they get out and they go full-time residence for a couple of years. And so, but what I had done differently was I had created the time to do it. Well, my wife and I created the time to do it back 7 years ago now, because I started in 2013. So it's actually, I started 9 years ago. And so I found so much benefit from the experience while I was still on active duty. And, you know, the curriculum there obviously showed me things that I was not familiar with when it comes to finance and accounting and those kinds of things. But also it was really interesting in like the leadership and the operations, contextualizing my military experience, learning through the case study, the applicability of my military experience in the private sector and other things. And so really the benefit from having graduated was, I mean, if you just look at my last job, I was the commanding officer of an air station. So I had 1,000 people working for me on an 11,000 person air station. We had E-18G Growlers, the electronic attack airplane. We had P-8 Poseidons and a bunch of other stuff. I had over 30 functions working for me, from air traffic control to airfield maintenance to facility life cycle maintenance. And we had environmental compliance. We had food and beverage services, revenue producing services, stuff like that. So really that Darden experience allowed me to really understand things a lot better when it came to the kind of core business functions, but also made me a much, much better leader in trying to understand what, because I was never the expert in the room in a meeting. People would come and meet with me and they were the experts in their particular thing, fire and emergency services, security, whatever it was. And so, so I enjoyed getting to understand what they were presenting to me as a problem and understanding how I could help them to break down a hurdle, advocate for resources, whatever it was. So really, you know, the Darden experience in amongst a lot of things really set me up for success in the rest of my naval career that I enjoyed for 7 years after Darden.
So post Darden, what do you do next? What were your next moves?
So after Darden, I'd already been accepted to the job in Sweden. It worked out that I was able to finish and graduate Darden in May. We packed up in June and we were in Sweden in early July in Stockholm. And so I spent 2 years there as a naval attaché and as an individual contributor working the Navy issues, like I mentioned before, and political military issues. In an interesting time, this was right after the 2014 incursion in the Stockholm archipelago, a lot of Baltic Sea contention on the northern flank of what we call Europe, and dealing with European issues. We also had that following April, I think it was, we had a lone wolf terrorist attack in Stockholm. And so very interesting time to be in Europe. And so I did 2 years there. And then I came back to the US to California, where I kind of did a short stint for about 11 months. I was working on something, but then I came up to Whidbey Island to take over command of the air station and the training range complex up here. And so that's, and now 3 years after taking that over, like I said before, I relinquished command and have, you know, on the path to retirement and transitioning into the private sector.
All right. Well, I mean, that's a lot. I know you summarized that in just a couple of minutes, but man, that's a ton. It's great to hear how your Darden experience was helpful to you, because I you are right to note that oftentimes we are talking to military candidates who are kind of closer to that separation point. And so we undoubtedly have some listeners to this podcast wondering about the timing, you know, when is the right time? How did you weigh that, Matt? I mean, you obviously made a choice, you know, to go an MBA program. You still had a number of years potentially ahead of you. You mentioned you were retirement eligible, but nevertheless, not certain that you were going to separate. So how'd you think about timing?
That's right. So when's the right time? You know, there really is no right time. It's just what you make of it. And so it was, my wife and I knew that it was as good a time as any, even though there was uncertainty, because I knew that after my first year at Darden, I was going to be moving to something else. I don't think I'd been selected for Sweden yet, but I was pretty sure that was looking good. But it would have dictated us, you know, in our development of what we were going to do next as well. So you can never fully predict what's going to happen. So you just got to jump in and start doing it. And then you're going to find that you'll make it happen from there through all those, the support of family and learning teams and friends and the faculty and staff there at Darden. I had to work very closely with them to be able to manage how to get through attaché training at Defense Intelligence Agency, 6 months of intensive Swedish language training, and my last couple terms of Darden. And so they were really very gracious, and we worked through a very equitable plan to be able to work through all that stuff. And so, so you just got to go for it, and you got to rely on the fact that you'll be able to work through problems as they come up. Oh, and then, so then there's the other aspect of the military. So I bring the post 9/11 GI Bill. And so when it comes to funding, I mean, there's the finance folks at Darden were very good about helping me to navigate that process. And so that's certainly something that I felt that I should take advantage of. And that also led into the whole decision to go ahead and pursue it at that time. My wife and I look back often. She's in a master's program at Harvard for a master's in management. And we find it challenging supporting her through this time since she works through her courses. But we often look back and say, I don't know how we did it. And I really don't know how we did it, but we did it. You know, we managed it.
Yeah, maybe moving halfway around the world to Sweden seemed easy after all of this. Well, what's next for you? You mentioned that you're trying to figure out your next thing. I know that's always an exciting time. Maybe it's a little bit of a nerve-wracking time too, right? You've been doing what you're doing, and maybe your next thing and the thing after that, you know, it felt like maybe it was a bit more known than where you are right now. I'm curious as to how things are going.
Yeah, they're going great. They're going great because we're feeling, you know, this is the time where we decided we needed some stability. We decided on the Seattle area because of a lot of the employment opportunities around here, let alone the opportunities for remote work nowadays after COVID. But my older son was 7 when we moved here. He'd lived in 7 different places, had visited 17 countries in Europe. And that's all great, but it was just like, okay, now let's have a community. Let's, you know, get engaged in community type of stuff. And so we're really enjoying that aspect of it. Meanwhile, on the professional side, I've been working with a lot of these great veteran service organizations that have come up through the years to try to help folks like myself to understand how we contextualize our military skills in the private sector and figure out what our purpose is going to be, you know, in pursuing our purpose after this. And so I'm certainly getting to understand some industries better through conversations. I've had probably about 150 different conversations the last few months as I've worked with these different organizations. And so I'm really, you know, excited about opportunities out there in the tech industry, and certainly opportunities to try to help influence where healthcare goes. So there's just wonderful things out there, and I'm feeling a little bit like I need to focus and just pursue something discreet, but I've certainly enjoyed the discovery of looking at a lot of possibilities out there.
Well, it's interesting to hear you talk about your process. It's very similar to what our students who want to switch function or industry or kind of see what's out there and explore. It's the process they go through. You start with just having lots of cups of coffee, or these days, Zoom calls, who knows? But you just get curious about what people do and ask them questions. And you know, one conversation leads to another. And at some point, people start saying, send me your resume. I actually think I know about something. Or, hey, let me know if you ever apply for anything. You may find a role and you end up applying and activating that network. And well, that's how it goes. It's a slower process, but you know, I think you learn a lot in the process.
That's right. You sure do. And back to what does Darden offer for anybody listening out there? I've also been relying heavily on the alumni career services, Jen Coleman, Marty Spike, and even a couple of years, well, it was in 2020 during COVID, where there were opportunities presented for, there was a Design Your Life workshop that Marty led, which was great. I jumped on it and was able to start kind of working through how am I going to design your life off of the book, Design Your Life, which I encourage anybody who's looking to switch to look at. And then also the Mission Collaborative, which is also founded on the Design Your Life concept, was a more operationalized process that, again, was through, I think that was through the UVA alumni services. So plus just the periodic, you know, I've been able to jump on different webinars. There was a product management webinar that was just that Jen Coleman had just hosted. And so that was just helpful just to be able to talk with other people, Darden grads, about what these things are. And so I really encourage people to look at, you know, that as yet another value that you add to your life by embracing the alumni career services and everything that they have to offer.
Well, Matt, we've covered a lot of ground here. I wonder if you have a final piece of advice, something you'd like to share with our listeners as they think about potentially taking this step in their life and career.
So we talked about that there's no right time. I mean, there's better times. It's situation dependent, and it only happens when you make it happen. So you got to know that you're going to do it with support of family and friends and your classmates. One of the things that I learned afterwards, I went to a short course at Monterey at the Naval Postgraduate School called the Navy Senior Leader Seminar. And they developed their curriculum with along four lines: know your industry, know yourself, stay fit, and be a change leader. And there's some elements at Darden about the stay fit. You know, there were some different opportunities, especially in the first leadership residency, about the importance of staying fit, you know, both mentally and physically. Knowing your industry, you got to kind of figure out what your industry is and know it. But knowing yourself and being a change leader, and it's not just coming in and being a disruptor. It's just knowing that change is always happening. And so how are you going to be a change leader in your industry, and what do you bring? And so I think that as you look at the Darden experience, it's really a lot about knowing yourself and developing into being a change leader so that you can really drive your team to be a high performing team out there. And so, you know, I'd really encourage people to take a serious look at it, and throughout the process, not just when you get there, but be present. You know, that's another thing that Darden was really articulated, and being present and active listening throughout that process, and knowing yourself and knowing how you're going to fit and knowing what you're going to get out of it, I think are all important aspects to making the decision to jump in and do it.
All right. Well, thank you for these recommendations, Matt. And thank you so much for your time today and for sharing your story with your listeners. It's always great to catch up with students and alumni for these conversations. I learn something new every time. And it's also nice to connect with a fellow Sweden enthusiast. So
that's right.
I hope you and your family stay safe, and thank you again for coming on the show.
Yeah, well, thank you, Brett. I really appreciate the opportunity. I hope that not only anybody listening to this would really give Darden a good look, but also anybody who I'm speaking to is active duty military, no matter how much time you have left in your time, really take a look at it and figure out how to do it and see if it's right for you. So thanks for allowing me to put that message out there, and I really appreciate what you're doing in the podcast. I learn through every time that I listen to your podcast episode. So thank you, Brett.
And that was my interview with Matt Arney, a member of our Executive MBA class of 2015. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at exec, that's EXEC, MBA at darden.virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.